7681 Nevadans for Reproductive Freedom versus Donna Washington et al. Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Council, coming up. This matter also is set for 15 minutes per side. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Okay, and so then when the clock ticks down from 15 to 3, you'll get a yellow light and the tone, but the clock will keep running until it runs out of time.
Understood.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm David Fox on behalf of Appellant Nevadans for Reproductive Freedom. For over a century, the people of Nevada have reserved to themselves the power to propose constitutional amendments by petition and to enact or reject them at the polls. This petition is a straightforward exercise of that reserved constitutional right, and it complies with all statutory and constitutional requirements. It has a clear single subject of creating and defining a constitutional right to reproductive freedom. It has a straightforward description of effect that explains the scope and effects of the new proposed right, and it does not require the state to spend any money on anything. Your Honors may or may not agree with the petition as a matter of policy, but under Nevada's Constitution, that is a question for the people of Nevada to decide. I will start with a single subject issue. I'll then turn to the description of effect and, time permitting, briefly address the unfunded mandate issue. On the single subject issue, 2 years ago in Helton, this court rejected a single subject challenge to a petition that made two discrete sets of changes to Nevada elections law to create open primaries and to adopt ranked choice general election voting. This is a much easier case than Helton because this petition makes only one overall change to Nevada law. It proposes to adopt and define a new constitutional right. The single subject analysis proceeds in two steps. First, the court must determine the petition's purpose, and then the court must look whether each provision of the petition relates to and is germane to that purpose. Here, the purpose is clear: to create a fundamental constitutional right to reproductive freedom. Unlike in some prior cases like Nevadans for the Protection of Private Property or Las Vegas Taxpayers, there's been no confusion or inconsistency over the purpose of this petition. Creating a right to reproductive freedom is the title of the petition, the first sentence of the first section of the petition's operative text, the first sentence of the description of effect, the first paragraph of our brief, and it's our client's name. We've been very clear about what the purpose of this petition is. On the second step of the analysis, the court asks whether each of the petition's provisions is functionally related and germane to that purpose and to each other. And here, each provision serves to define and explain the new constitutional right. Section 1.1 creates the new fundamental right, explains what reproductive freedom means, and explains the way in which it will be protected via strict scrutiny analysis. Section 1.2 creates an exception to the new right. Abortion after viability may be regulated, and an exception to that exception, not if the abortion is medically necessary to the health of the mother. Sections 1.3, 1.4, and 1.5 address particular applications of that new right. The state cannot penalize people based on the outcome of their own pregnancies. The state cannot penalize healthcare providers for providing reproductive healthcare services with consent and within the standard of care. And the state cannot penalize anyone else for helping consenting individuals exercise their right to reproductive freedom.
Counsel?
Yes.
How would you respond to the district court's conclusion that postpartum care, for example, is not related to abortion and that neither of those are related to a vasectomy? How would you respond to those conclusions of the district court?
So, Your Honor, I think that approach is fundamentally inconsistent with the approach that this court took in Helton, because it asks if each of the practical applications of the overall purpose relates to each of the other practical applications of the overall purpose at a very high level of specificity. And if the court had done that in Helton, it clearly would have reached the opposite conclusion. Because in Helton, for example, there were provisions that said how party names will be included on primary election ballots that had absolutely nothing to do with how the ranked choice voting analysis would occur in the general election ballot. The way Helton proceeded is it didn't ask that kind of question. Instead, it asked, what are the overall changes that are being made to Nevada law, and do they all relate to a single subject? And so my response to the district court is that here, each of those types of activities are activities that are well within the constitutional right to reproductive freedom that is being created, because each relates to the choice of whether to become pregnant, whether to remain pregnant, and then recovery from pregnancy. And I understand that there is a view that this is a very broad overall right, but I submit that it is actually quite cabined. We're talking just about reproduction. We're talking just about choices related to pregnancy. We're not talking, for example, about choices that just relate to sex. So things like the regulation of brothels or pornography are unaffected by this. And we're not talking about things that are just related to children. So things like child abuse, pediatric healthcare, education, none of that is related to this. This is a fundamental right that affects a single coherent slice of life, choices about reproduction. Again, one can object to the policy of that, but that is a choice for the people of Nevada to make. In arguing otherwise, the plaintiff's primary argument, as I understand it, is to pull a distinction between framework and mechanics from this court's decision in Helton. And I submit that that just takes a single sentence from Helton and pulls it entirely out of context. What this court was saying in Helton was that that petition was not as broad as the challengers made it out to be. It wasn't related to all aspects of Nevada elections. It was related only to a particular framework for choosing officials, and it excluded things, which the court characterized as mechanics, about how exactly ballots are cast. But obviously what the court was not saying is that nothing that can be characterized as mechanics can ever be modified by a petition. For one thing, there's no basis in the Constitution or Nevada statutes for that sort of rule. But for another thing, the petition in Helton did address an awful lot of mechanics, including, again, the way that particular candidate names and party affiliations appear on the ballot. So the court can't have been saying that mechanics are out. What it was saying is just that is the framework of this petition. And here, too, there are clear boundaries on this right. We're not asserting a right without any boundaries. Under these circumstances, any concern about the breadth of the fundamental right to reproductive freedom is really a concern about the merits of the right. It might be a reason to oppose the petition, but it's not a reason to conclude that it addresses more than one subject.
What do you say to the district court's conclusion about log rolling, which also flies under the banner of single subject, but it's slightly different?
Your Honor, I think that this is a particularly clear case of that does not involve log rolling. And the reason is that generally when there's a concern about log rolling, the concern is that some very controversial change is buried within a number of other less controversial changes in a way that will disguise that problem to the voters. And here we don't have that concern. Everyone in front of the court agrees that the most controversial application of this petition is the right to an abortion. And the right to an abortion is very clearly included in this petition.
Right, but I think what the district court found was that widespread agreement exists, for example, on infertility treatments and fetal health, you know, but that when you get into the abortion and the definitions, that becomes more controversial, but you're putting popular widespread support into more divisive issues together, and that's log rolling.
So, Your Honor, 2 points on that. First of all, I think in the wake of the Alabama Supreme Court's recent decision, I think that it is not necessarily clear that there is widespread support for all of the other aspects of things that are included in this petition. Certainly, fertility has become quite controversial in some respects.
Fair enough.
And in addition, I think that because abortion is so front and center in this, it does not have the problem of hiding a controversial change within an uncontroversial change. And I would distinguish this court's decision in the Nevadans for Private Property Rights case in that respect. There, what you had was a petition that purported to be focused on eminent domain almost exclusively, but smuggled within it this very, very broad fundamental right to private property of unclear dimensions. But that wasn't how the petition was being sold to the voters. Here, this is nothing like that.
So you think log rolling is only when the divisive issue is somehow hidden or obscured?
Your Honor, that is, I think, the primary policy concern that log rolling addresses. The other thing I would say about log rolling is that, as Helton made clear, log rolling is not just when you have more than one thing in a single petition. Obviously, it was true in Helton that there might have been voters who favored the open primaries but not the ranked choice voting, or vice versa. But the court rejected that as an example of log rolling because it said log rolling only occurs if there are two separate subjects within a single petition. And because the court thought that everything related to this single framework, it rejected the log rolling challenge. And here, too, everything relates to the asserted right to reproductive freedom. So under the analysis in Helton, there's no log rolling concern, even if there may be some people who favor some but not the rest of this petition.
Well, and it seems, does it not, that the 10 delineated procedures all kind of relate to each other in various ways, not just are germane and related to the umbrella of reproductive health care, but prenatal care would be related to miscarriage. vasectomies, tubal ligations, fertility issues can be related to whether somebody's ever in the position, God forbid, of having to choose whether to have an abortion or not. So it doesn't seem that they're all just in a cabin related to reproductive health care. They have relationships to each other.
I completely agree with that, Your Honor. And it's also the case related to that, that it's not a case where you could sort of carve out a couple of the sections of this and say, well, those have nothing to do with the rest of it. All of them relate to various aspects of the right that are not just abortion. That's exactly right. And so, for example, many of the provisions that the district court thought only related to abortion also relate quite clearly to miscarriages, as one example. So this isn't a situation where this could be carved into separate petitions without losing the broad protection that it's intended to protect. It's not divisible in the way that the Helton petition was arguably divisible. And again, in Helton, the court rejected that challenge, even though that petition was quite clearly divisible. I'll move on in the last few minutes to the description of effect challenge. The petition's description of effect accurately and succinctly summarizes the petition. The district court held the description unlawful based on three perceived omissions. That approach was fundamentally misguided at the threshold because, as this court has explained, including in Helton, there will always be some ramification of or provision in an initiative petition that the challenger feels is not adequately addressed. That doesn't invalidate the description as long as it's straightforward, succinct, and non-argumentative overall, as this one is. In any event, each of the three omissions that the district court identified are already included in the description to the extent accurate, and the district court's perceived omissions were based, for the most part, on a misunderstanding of what the petition does. So first, the district court said that the description fails to mention that the law would bar the state from finding, regulating, or prosecuting any miscarriage or stillbirth. But the description does say that the state may not penalize, prosecute, or take action against any individual based on the outcome of the pregnancy of that individual, which is almost exactly what the district court thought was missing. The angle that the district court and plaintiffs seem to think are missing is that it does not say that the state can't prosecute a third party based on the end of a pregnancy of an individual. But the petition doesn't bar that prosecution. It's just not the case that the petition would bar a domestic abuser from being prosecuted for causing a miscarriage. All of the provisions that the district court was concerned about protect the end of someone's own pregnancy or something that's done with consent. And so that is just outside the protection of the petition. Second, the district court said that the description fails to mention that a provider of healthcare has the power to order a late-term abortion that is medically indicated. But again, the description makes clear that the state may not prohibit a post-viability abortion if it's medically indicated. It doesn't use the phrase provider of healthcare, but a reasonable voter would assume that medically indicated implies a healthcare provider. And the challenge also assumes that a definition of provider of healthcare from the malpractice regulations in the Nevada statutes would apply in this context, and it's far from obvious that that is so. That's something that the court could address in a post-enactment challenge, just like it could address the scope of the smoking ban in the smoking ban case, but it's not something that is at all obvious from the face of the petition. Finally, equality and equal protection. What the petition says is that it does not affect the rights of equality and equal protection, so there's nothing to explain. With that, I'll reserve my remaining time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Jason Guanasso, and I represent the respondents, Donna Washington and the Coalition for Parents and Children. Abortion is perhaps the most contentious issue in the nation, particularly in the post-Dobbs era of abortion law. And in Nevada, fortunately, abortion is not a controversial topic as it has been in other states because the right to abortion and abortion care has been settled law since 1990 and can't be overturned unless there's a vote of the people. Thankfully, this case is not about abortion law or any of the plethora of other subjects contained in appellate's petition. This case is about protecting the process for amending our Nevada Constitution by preventing the appellant petition drafters from circulating a confusing petition that addresses an abyss of subjects that is misleading and will be costly if passed. Now, the appellants contend that the district court's order violates certain policy justifications of the single subject rule. We disagree with this assertion. The single subject rule facilitates the initiative process by preventing petition drafters from circulating confusing petitions that address multiple subjects. This prevents voter confusion and promotes informed decisions by narrowing the initiative to a single matter and providing information on that single matter to the voter. So in sum, the single subject rule facilitates a transparent and fair democratic process for the voters.
Counsel, why isn't reproductive freedom a single subject?
Thank you, Your Honor. I struggled with that question, and I know as this court deliberates that it will be looking at Helton for guidance as to whether we're dealing with a single subject here. And I'd like to direct the court's attention to page 18 of our brief and get right into this framework versus mechanics analysis. Unlike the petition in Helton, which could be reduced to a framework for electing officials, the subjects contained in this petition cannot be confined to a single operative framework. Instead, the petition addresses mechanics of reproducing and procreating, and this is illustrated in the
Let me interrupt you. In Helton, I mean, if you start with the idea that the single subject of Helton was the framework of elections and primaries and general elections were subparts of that, reproductive health care procedures are subparts of reproductive health care. The mechanics, would it not? The mechanics would be, for instance, in childbirth. You're going to have a child at home. You're going to have a child in the hospital. You're going to use a doctor, a midwife, epidural, natural. Tubal ligation. The mechanics would be, are you going to remove the full fallopian tubes, partial removal, cauterization of tubes? The mechanics aren't the procedure. That's just part of reproductive health care.
Your Honor, we would respectfully disagree with that characterization based on the language that was provided in Helton. If you consider the mechanics of voting in the decision, and both it seemed that both the dissent and the majority agreed that the mechanics were early voting, absentee ballots, machine voting, paper ballots. The corollary here, tubal ligation, is its own topic that's actually covered by its own chapter in the NRS. Vasectomies is its own topic covered by its own chapter in the NRS.
Is the fact that there are statutes in separate sections of the Nevada Revised Statutes really relevant at all? Because I have no idea how those things are organized, and they don't always make sense. You know, when you are a legislative process, sometimes things just go all different places. It doesn't really seem very informative.
Well, the chapters of the NRS, Your Honor, thank you for the question, represent a subject matter. It is distinct subject matter that's being regulated by statute. And so,
theoretically,
but when in the legislative process, legislators, when they're proposing a BDR, for example, can't propose BDRs that cover multiple titles. It has to be germane to the title and the chapter that they're proposing a change to. In this situation, when you're dealing with chapters, for example, we have a full chapter on birth control. We have four different chapters on birth control. That represents a body of law signifying that this is a distinct subject.
Do any of those sections say there's a right to birth control? Because that's what this referendum would say. Right.
Among other things, a right to birth control. In fact, there are four petitions, arguably, within this petition. I mean, there's the right to birth control, the right to tubal ligation, the right to
all reproductive freedom, a choice about whether you want to reproduce. Like, why is a statutory tail wagging the dog? You say that it's settled law in Nevada, fortunately, but Roe was settled law as well. So certainly the drafters of the petition are trying to make sure that it doesn't get unsettled here in Nevada and grant a broad constitutional right to reproductive freedom. How do any of those choices not support that effort?
I think the analysis in the the property rights case is instructive here because he had a general statement of rights with regard to property, but the real issue in that case, if you recall, was eminent domain. And so the court kept in that petition eminent domain, but took out the other provisions in that under the umbrella of property rights. This is a similar situation where you've got reproductive freedom, which is an umbrella category. And keep in mind, the statute says single subject. It doesn't say single category. So we're dealing with a category of rights within which there are multiple subject matters. And so if the statute had said that one of the requirements was that we have a single category, then our arguments would fail. But the statute's clear. We have a single subject rule, and in this situation, we have multiple subjects. So now the question is, are these subjects functionally related to each other? And we would propose to you that they're not functionally related. Each of these processes, the medical care involved, for example, in postpartum and prenatal care is separate and distinct from the medical care provided to men with regard to vasectomies. There are different principles at play. There are different standards of...
What principles are different?
Well, for example, the standard of care for doctors, for example, to provide medical care in those subject matters. Or with regard to infertility care, it's the same thing. There are different considerations, and each of these statutes and the chapters that we've cited in our briefing dealing with each of these distinct subject matters treat them more like, if we go back to the chart, treat them more like the distinct laws governing early voting, for example, absentee ballots, machine voting, paper ballots. All of these topics, all these mechanics that the court identified in the Helton case are all related to voting, but they're separate and distinct parts of the voting process. They're separate and distinct subject matter constituting the mechanics of voting versus...
But you can't take those 10 delineated procedures and look at them solely academically, right? If my wife repeatedly has miscarriages and pregnancies and it's very difficult for her and I choose to get a vasectomy so that we don't have to go through that and maybe we want to adopt, those things are very much related. Real world, they're related. Prenatal care, as I said earlier, is related to what happens in a pregnancy and potentially a miscarriage. Postpartum care is related to what happens in childbirth. These are all related not just to reproductive health care, but to each other. How can they not be related to each other?
Yeah, I think, Your Honor, if the petitioners wanted a fundamental right to a vasectomy, then you could create that kind of petition. And the court has said if you can have...
Would this be different if none of the delineated procedures were in there in your mind? If it just said individuals have the right to make reproductive health care decisions for themselves and we can't prosecute people who perform services related to reproductive health care?
If we had a broad statement in a petition like that, that under that hypothetical, I think that it would fail under a description.
Because it would be too vague.
Too vague, exactly.
Right? So by putting in the procedures to bring some specificity to it, now it's too broad.
Well, true, but also I think you have to relate that first section then, Your Honor, to the next, the sections 2 through 5, which specifically deal with abortion. So now we've got these, in section 1 we have all of these delineated procedures, all of these mechanics.
Counsel,
of procreate.
The other sections also relate to procedures other than abortion, don't they?
Well, Your Honor, let's take a look at it. I don't believe they do. I think Section 2 deals exclusively with abortion.
So let's look at sub 3, right? Not taking adverse action against an individual based on the outcome of their pregnancy, including without limitation a miscarriage, stillbirth, or abortion. So that's not limited to abortion, right?
True. So subsection 3 is not limited only to abortion.
And 4... not penalize prosecutor adverse action against a provider of health care
and reproductive.
Covering providing abortion care to or providing reproductive care services to an individual. So that's beyond abortion, right?
That's right.
Okay. And five, shall not prosecute any individual for aiding or assisting another individual in exercising their right to reproductive freedom. So that's broader than abortion, right?
That's right.
Okay. So which of these is only about abortion?
Let me respond to your question by saying this, that the subsections of the petition that we just went over, they fail to create what the case law calls an ascertainable, good faith, sensible framework that is faithful to this court's holding in Helton. I think the court should be concerned about an analysis that creates a category rather than a subject matter and says, we are going to allow categories of rights to be presented to the people for a vote versus a specific subject matter. So let me present you a hypothetical. Let's say we have a gun rights, a freedom for gun rights, and then we have within the broad umbrella of gun rights all the various manners that you, different guns you can use, different licensing, and those things. And we have all that broken down. That would be a broad category with subject matter based on the different type of gun that you could use that are governed, that have different rules and different restrictions and different considerations for how those things are regulated. Likewise, in the voting rights case that you had in Helton, you had multiple other subjects, early voting, absentee voting, machine voting, paper ballots that were identified as mechanical. And if those had been included in the petition, it would have disqualified that petition under the single subject rule. It appeared to me that both the majority and the dissent agreed on that point. And so this case, we have the mechanics of what it means to get pregnant, and we have the mechanics of reproduction in general, but we don't have a coherent framework that pulls all these things in and doesn't, and ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that the petitions that are presented to voters aren't confusing. They're not, and ultimately in the legislative history, I'll find that Senator Townsend and Senator Raggio and others were concerned about creating petitions that were confusing and had multiple subject matter attached to them. In this case, you have,
because you're running out of time, with respect to the unfunded mandate issue, because you mentioned costs at the outset, the board, I mean, that's just made up, right? There's no requirement in this petition that there be a board or a board created. So the board that this would require that makes this an unfunded mandate is just made up. Is that correct?
The board is a foreseeable consequence of the language that's presented in this petition. How is this going to be regulated without somebody to adjudicate that issue, somebody to actually decide?
Aren't all those things regulated right now?
Your Honor, I see my time is up.
You can answer.
Repeat the question, please.
Aren't all of those things regulated right now?
They are regulated now, but this petition would require a new process for that regulation.
In what way?
As I think Your Honor was trying to point out, I think on my part that would be speculative, and I wouldn't want to invite this court to speculate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm happy to address any questions the court has. Otherwise, very briefly on the unfunded mandate, I think this is just an easier case than Herbst Gaming because ultimately what we have is the same thing, which is speculation about prosecution costs. And here, unlike in Herbst, this is reducing the prospect of prosecution rather than increasing it. So I think that's why it's an easier case. In terms of the plaintiff's chart, I understand the emphasis on the chart. For me, where there's a big question mark is where reproductive freedom goes. That is the single framework to which everything in this petition relates. And I think that is fundamentally why this is a single subject and the description of effect is adequate. It's up to the people of Nevada whether this should go on the ballot and then whether it should be enacted. So we would ask the court to reverse and allow the people to make that choice. Thank you, Your Honor.
What about the idea of the prosecution part of it? I know that was one of the things that the judge pointed out, saying from a single subject standpoint. Arguably, creating the right would mean people can't be prosecuted. I understand why it's enumerated in there. And obviously, what good is having a choice if we chill that the providers that won't provide you the access to the procedures if you make the choice? But how do you confront the judge's determination that the prosecution part of it kind of is a violation of single subject?
Your Honor, I think any time you create a fundamental right, you are restricting government action that would violate that right. But I think it would be an odd conclusion that you can never create a fundamental right without violating the single subject rule. So that is just a corollary of the right. It's clearly germane to the creation of the right to then protect that right against violations by prosecutions that would violate the right. So I think it just straightforwardly is encompassed within the single subject of this petition. And I think opposing counsel's example of gun rights sort of illustrates that point, because I think it would be a surprising result if a right to bear arms were not an appropriate single subject for a constitutional petition. Certainly states across the country have adopted that right via petition processes, including in states with single subject rules, and I would expect that that would be a valid petition for the people to consider. And here, too, this is a valid petition, so we'd ask the court to reverse.
Thank you. All right, this case will stand.